If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
Welcome to The Tool Shed, a podcast covering all levels of professional baseball to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, The Tool Shed podcast has you covered with rankings, player analysis, and in-depth discussion. And now, here's your host, Eric Cross.
What's up, everyone? Welcome into another episode of the Tool Shed Podcast, brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 442. Thank you for joining me. I'm your host, Eric Cross. You can find me on Twitter at EricCrossMLB, and the show is at Tool Shed Pod. Going over some rookies for 2026 in this one, specifically hitters. I'll do pitchers in the episode on Monday of next week. So just hitters in this one for 2026 value. So nothing long-term here, just looking only at 2026 impact, you know, who you should be drafting, who you shouldn't be drafting, you know, who's a good value, et cetera, et cetera. A lot of interesting names are going to be debuting either on opening day or probably shortly thereafter, you know, or some midseason guys. We'll go over all of that. I'll go over all of that in this episode. But before I get into all of that, the usual housekeeping. If you enjoy the podcast, please rate and review on whichever platform you do listen on. You can find all of my content either on Rotoballer or over on my Patreon, which is toolshedfantasy.com. And make sure you check out all of the great content over on Rotoballer with Rotoballer's Premium Pass. Right now is a great time to take advantage of all the phenomenal content and tools available at Rotoballer with our Fantasy Baseball Draft Kit and MLB Premium Pass. A ton of my content is in there, ATC projections, Nick Mariano's rankings, mock draft tools, and so much more. And if you act now, you can get a whopping 30% off at checkout using the promo code TOOLSHED. Everything you need to get you ready for your drafts is over on Rotoballer via content, tools, and so much more. All right, let's start with the big name, Connor Griffin. I'll probably go mostly in order here of ADP. And there's really only two, you know, kind of three guys that are in the top 200. Connor Griffin, he's been going, I mean, ADP for him keeps changing, but yeah, I'm looking at NFBC ADP over the last like 3 weeks or so, which for him is like 165, but that again keeps getting higher and higher, or earlier and earlier, I should say, with really each passing home run that he hits. He already has three home runs this spring, though those are his only three hits this spring, but still, new metrics under the hood so far have been pretty good. But, you know, the hype on him, it's the hype train is derailing at this point, like in a good way. But it's gotten to the point where I feel like if this continues, he's going to be top 100 ADP. Like he'll be going in that 80 to 100 range, I bet, in a couple of weeks. If this continues, we'll see. But especially if he's still in camp at that point, and we're starting to think that he's going to be on the opening day roster for Pittsburgh. That's the big question. I mean, I have been pretty consistently saying that I don't think that Pittsburgh should do that. I mean, I know I've been, you know, free the prospect in the past, but I feel like it's situation dependent. And with Connor Griffin, I mean, obviously he's a phenomenal talent, and it's not often where you can say this guy has, you know, top five overall upside for fantasy, not just top five shortstop, top five overall, like getting up into the Bobby Witt Jr. range, you know, getting up into the Corbin Carroll range, you know, Acuna range, that type of range. That's the upside we're talking about here with Connor Griffin, but he only has 21 games above single A. You know, he had 50 games at low A, 51 in high A, and 21 in double A. And yeah, he was phenomenal every level he was at. He had 338 in low A, 325 in high A, 337 in double A. Lowest OBP at any level was 396. He had a slug above 500 at all three levels. WRC plus above 155 at all three levels, while being young for every level he was at, especially double A. You know, 19 years old in double A, just doing his thing and excelling and really just getting better at every level. I mean, on top of having, you know, the massive power, the massive speed, and, you know, 21 home runs, 65 steals. So the surface stats were there. He got better in terms of being a pure hitter. Contact rate was going up, K rate going down, walk rate ticking up a little bit. So all those improvements that we wanted to see from him, he made, you know, in spades even. So, you know, he's checking off all the boxes with, you know, a big fat Sharpie. And long-term, I mean, I made a trade for him in a couple dynasty leagues already, including my home keeper league. I have him in another one. So, you know, obviously he's a guy that you want all the shares of. But for this year, I mean, I don't think I'm going to go after him at that ADP. If it's going to be top 150, probably even closer to top 100. Again, I just don't think he's up to like June. And I think that'd be the best thing for him, to be honest. Like, you know, if anybody were to, you know, have a, you know, 25, 50 rookie season like I did in my bold predictions, it'd be him. But I think the best thing for him would be to keep him in double A, triple A, you know, probably triple A at this point, you know, for 2 months. Give him a couple months, bring him up in June. You know, I think that would be the best thing for Pittsburgh to do with him. So, you know, as much as I would love to see him up opening day and see him be, you know, one of the best rookies we've ever seen, you know, I think he's probably up closer to midseason than opening day. But I don't know. We'll see. Pittsburgh, you know, never seems to do what we want or what we think they should do. So we'll see on that one. But for ADP being top 150 for the most part for Connor Griffin, I probably won't have a lot of shares unless he falls, but let's just be honest, he's not going to fall whatsoever. The next guy up in ADP for rookies, where we're looking at Samuel Bisaccia going around like that pick 175, 180 or so range, and also Sal Stewart kind of sneaking into that back end top 200 lately as well. I mean, I feel fine with both these guys. I mean, catcher is super deep. You know, it is insanely deep. And, you know, Bisaccia is a guy that I think I have him ranked as like my, what is it? Probably like my catcher 12 or something like that. Catcher 13. He's right around that back end top, you know, 12 starting catcher ranking spot. And if you want to wait on, you know, getting your first catcher and you want to, you know, get an upside play, he's great. And, you know, his ADP here, I'm referencing NFBC ADP, so that always gets pushed up. So he's probably just outside the top 200 or so in Yahoo formats. But you know, in your single catcher Yahoo league, you can really afford to wait. You know, I've done that in a lot of my leagues, though I love me some, you know, Ramirez, some Drake Baldwin, etc. A lot of guys that I love at this catcher spot. I'm kind of becoming a catcher guy, oddly enough. But you know, I've found myself in my drafts kind of waiting because you can wait until everyone else has kind of been filling their spots already, their catcher spot, and at the same time, you're out there filling outfield or shortstop or second base or, you know, reliever, starter, whatever. And then, like, look at this, like, catcher 10 to 14 range. It's in ADP, it's Yainer Diaz, Adley Rutschman, Alejandro Kirk, Francisco Alvarez, and Sammy Bisaccia. So you can wait in that range and get an upside guy. You know, whether you know you're an Alvarez guy, you're a Bisaccia guy, you're, you know, banking on a bounce back from Adley, you can still get some pretty good value and pretty good upside if you wait. So I am fine if you want to wait and take the upside play on Bisaccia. You know, especially if you're in a single catcher Yahoo league. You know, if it doesn't work out, like, all right, oh, Bisaccia, you know, he struggles or he gets demoted to AAA. I mean, it could happen. I mean, we saw that with Kobe Mayo, you know, last year. You know, and he doesn't work out, then you drop him and pick up Kyle Teal or Carter Jensen or, you know, Dylan Dangle or whoever. So I don't think it'll be too much of a risk there. So I'm fine with that ADP. And then Sal Stewart is an ADP I really like. Stewart going around that, you know, back end top 200, I will be eating that ADP all day. Absolutely no questions asked. you know, he's not a guy you're going to draft as your starter, you know, at first base. But as a starting corner infielder, I freaking love South Stewart this year. I mean, first off, the ballpark, got to love that. Great American Small Park, you know, obviously one of the, you know, best hitters park, probably number two hitters park behind Coors Field. Huge BABIP boost, you know, boost home runs, everything you want for your hitter. It helps. So, you know, that is a nice little added bonus. But Stewart's profile is already really good. You know, he is really impressive in terms of quality of contact. It might not be Roman Anthony level of QOC or even Basile level, but it's right there. It's like just a hair below it, where he was above a 50% hard hit rate both in the majors and the minors last year. You know, the contact rate did tick down a little bit in AAA in the majors, but, you know, for the most part, he's been an average or above average contact rate guy. He keeps the K rate in check. So, honestly, a 260-30 type of season from Sal Stewart would not surprise me in the slightest, you know, or even maybe even more. I 35 home runs wouldn't surprise me either. I mean, that may be a little bit on the high end of the spectrum, absolutely, but I am quite high on Sal Stewart for this year and long term. I mean, I think I love the fit for him in Great American Ballpark. Love the power. I think he's a hit for a respectable average. You know, maybe OBP is slightly lower, you know, if he doesn't get that walk rate back up, but the bat is really, really good. And that lineup, I think, is going to be really, really good as well, especially if, you know, Ellie bounces back from his, you know, second half kind of injury struggles. And if you get like a Matty McClain bounce back, if you get Noel V taking that next step, there's just a lot of talent in that Cincinnati lineup. And I think Stewart could be a big part of that and be a guy that's, you know, hitting in the middle somewhere of that order and driving in a lot of runs. So I like Stewart a lot. He might be my favorite value or one of my favorite values of any rookie for 2026 redraft leagues this season. And kind of right behind him, two other guys that are going right around 200 or just outside of it, Carter Jensen and Munetaka Murakami. So another, you know, catcher right there. So Jensen's a guy where, you know, he's going more as like the catcher 16-ish, 17, 15, kind of in the mid-teens. But, you know, he's a guy that I am very high on. He's a guy that I've gotten higher and higher on every time I kind of look at the profile and rank him. I feel like I just keep bumping him up higher and higher. His quality of contact was really, really impressive last season. And you know, he draws walks. He can steal some bags. I mean, he's not a burner by any means, but he's always kind of added a little bit of a speed element. I mean, last year he had 10 steals in 111 games, 20 bombs, 12% walk rate, 25% K rate, 290, 377, 501 slash line. And then he added another three home runs in 20 games, 300, 391, 550 slash line with the Royals. You know, again, quality of contact was really, really good last year. He had a barrel rate, 21% with the Royals, 58% hard hit rate, 58% hard hit rate in AAA as well. Average EV, like 94, 95 miles an hour at both levels. Just really good quality of contact. And the contact skills are pretty decent as well. I mean, he's right around, you know, average in terms of in zone and overall. He's around 74% overall. Not a lot of swing and strikes, only a 10.7% swing and strike rate. And again, you know, keeps the K rate relatively in check, walks at a high clip. So I think he could provide you top 10 catcher value this year. Again, the deep is just going to get deeper at this position. If you get Basayo doing his thing, Carter Jensen doing his thing and kind of performing the way they could, you know, have the potential to do, this position is going to get even more sexy in 2027, assuming we have a season. So Jensen's a guy, again, late, if you know, single catcher league, late round, upside flyer, 100% for it. Now, if you're in a two catcher format, I would love him as my C2. A high upside C2 that can perform as a C1, sign me up all day. So I like Jensen's ADP a good bit. So I like him and Basile. Again, two upside flyers. If you don't want to, you know, pay a top 100, top 150 pick, and you want to wait, get one of these two guys, get Adley, Alvarez, you know, a lot of fun catchers in that range for sure. And then Munetaka Murakami, he's a guy that I think there's a lot of discourse, a lot of varying levels of intrigue with him. You get the people that are just all in, you know, given what he did over in Japan, how he was kind of beasting out over there, one of the better hitters in that league for really the best, better part of the last, you know, several years, seven, 8 years, whatever it's been. And then you got the other side of it where, you know, can he make enough contact? That's the question. You know, you see the, you know, the contact rates over there, you know, a little bit too much swing and strikes, you know, K rate, you know, all that is a concern, but the power is just massive. And anybody that's watched, kind of watched video of Murakami, whether it be, you know, batting practice this spring or just his games in Japan, like, this could be an immediate 30 homer guy. It's just a matter of your team build at the time, if you can build around a possible low average. But given where the ADP is, as it's kind of like in that 200 range, you know, that's not terrible. I thought it was going to be higher. I thought he was going to be like a top 150 ADP, just given the hype on him. That's really not the case. You know, again, 200, if you get him, that's probably, you're drafting your corner infielder at that range. Again, similar range to where Stal Stewart is. I prefer Stal Stewart this year, but, you know, since the ADP for Murakami is 200-ish, I'm okay with that. If he can give you 30 home runs, even if he hits 220, he gives you 30 home runs, that's at least, you know, decent value. And, hey, if he hits 240, 250, 35 bombs, I mean, he's pushing top 100 overall value there. So I don't think it's a bad ADP at all for Murakami. It's just a matter of what team build you have. You know, do you already have a decent average for your team? So you can, you know, afford to take on a possible lower average guy. But if you can, I don't hate that ADP whatsoever. And then you drop down a little bit in ADP here. You got Kazuma Okamoto going, you know, like 20, 25 picks later. He's in that 225-ish range. JJ Weatherholt around, you know, 240, 250. And then Justin Crawford around 270. And those are kind of like the last ones in the top 300. Though Kevin McGonigal, he's been going right in the back end of the top 300 lately. He was like in the top 300 and he kind of dipped outside of it for a bit, like January drafts. Now he's kind of ticking back up into like that back 25 of the top 300. And so a lot of great names there. I mean, right in those four names, two of those guys are top five prospects for me. You know, I just kind of bumped Weatherholt up from 6 to 5, and I have McGonigal at 2. So you got two elite guys. You got a tier one guy in McGonigal and a tier two guy in JJ Weatherholt. And, you know, out of everybody I've talked about or will talk about in this episode, yeah, I have Weatherholt ranked as my number one rookie hitter for this season, and McGonigal right behind him. Because I think they're both up very early. I have Weatherholt, you know, a slot higher because I think he has a better chance of cracking the opening day roster. I'd say Weatherholt being up on opening day is 50-50. McGonigal probably more like 35-65, 40-60. Kind of, it's a little bit lower percent chance. But St. Louis is in a full rebuild, and they have no reason to not give JJ Weatherholt a ton of time this season. And if they do, as they should, and if they do, I think he can be a guy that flirts with 2020. You know, not one thing in the profile stands out, but there's just so much good in the profile. He's above average power, and he showed that last year at a 48% hard hit rate in AAA. He had an average EV over 91 miles an hour. He's above average contact. You know, maybe even plus contact. I mean, last year, the minors, he was around 79-80% overall and 83% in zone with an 8% swinging strike rate. There's above average speed as well. You know, he had 23 steals last year, you know, including 14 in AA, 9 in AAA. You know, he's always been a guy that, you know, even in college was stealing bags. And the approach, one of the better all-around approaches you'll see, guy that walks a ton and keeps the K rate well under 20% and does so while hitting for power. It's not like he's one of those guys that just, you know, puts the bat on the ball and just keeps the K rate low in that regard, because he drives the ball too. Like, there's, again, above average raw power here too. So he just does everything well. not really any one glaring weakness or really anything where you're like, oh, hey, that's a concern. That doesn't really exist in Weatherholt's profile. And it'll be interesting to see kind of where he slots in long-term. You know, I'm guessing probably at second base because they get Mason Winn at short. Nolan Gorman's kind of still in the picture. So probably not at short. It'll be either second base or third base. I don't care. I think both positions, especially second base, are pretty bad right now. Third base has the big names at the top, then it gets kind of sketchy. Second base even more so, you know, in terms of sketchiness and lesser amount of big names at the top that you can really trust and can really depend on giving him big numbers. So I'd love to see him at second base, but regardless, I think he's going to be one of the best rookies of the 2026 season, a guy that could flirt with or even exceed 2020 with a good average, with a good OBP, and just giving you that good five-category production. I mean, I think he's the safest bet to give you, you know, a really good rookie season out of all of these rookies this year, just given the profile, the proximity, just the skill set, the opportunity to play. So Weatherholt is a guy that I would jump ADP for. You know, again, his ADP is in that 225, 250 range. I would be fine going, you know, 200, back in top 200 on Weatherholt, as I think he's going to be a really, really good rookie this season. You know, Justin Crawford, he's a guy that's trending more and more as being the starting center fielder for the Philadelphia Phillies for a couple of reasons. One, they have nobody else. Like, they did not bring anybody in. There's nobody else on the current roster that can really handle center field on a regular basis, maybe in a pinch, sure, but not on a regular basis. And you're not throwing any of those bench guys out there. Really, I mean, it just looks like it's Crawford's job to lose at this point. And assuming he has a, you know, at least a decent spring training and doesn't like struggle mightily, I think he's going to get that spot. And, you know, yeah, he'll probably hit lower in the lineup, but yeah, that's one of the better lineups, you know, 1-9 in baseball. So even if he's hitting like 8th or 9th, then he gets, you know, top of the order right behind him. He gets, you know, Trey Turner and Bryce Harper and all those guys right behind him. So that's a good, that could be a good spot to be in, you know, once you get one time through the order. Speed is elite. He is a double plus or better runner. I mean, just like his dad. He definitely follows in his dad's footsteps there. Contact skills are also really good. They're plus or better contact. He hasn't hit below 300 at any level since high A in 2023 when he hit 288 in 18 games. In 2024, it was 301 in high A, 333 in double A. 2025, he was in triple A for the entire year, hit 334 with a 411 OBP, 452 slug, 7 bombs, 46 steals. Full season of Crawford, I think 35, 40 steals is in play and a good average. And he's also, you know, even though the home run totals haven't been, you know, great so far because of a higher ground ball rate, which Roy's limited him, you know, the quality of contact is actually pretty solid. You know, last year in AAA, right around just a hair under 90 mile an hour average EV and a little bit over a 40% hard hit rate. So I think he could be kind of like his dad in that mid-teens range, you know, like 14, 15, 16, maybe even 17, 18 some years. But he'll need to get the ground ball rate down, get the launch angle up a little bit because that ground ball rate has been incredibly high everywhere he's gone. Last year, it was actually a little bit better than it had been, but it was still a 59% ground ball rate. So that definitely limits him, but it kind of plays to his skills, though, obviously, with the contact, the on-base abilities, the speed. So there's a lot to like here, and he's a guy late round, you know, get your measure, get your outfield, 5-6, something like that. Guy with just a ton of speed impact, you know, got his, you know, again, hit for average everywhere he's gone. So I don't expect him to be a rookie that's hitting 230. I mean, never say never. It's a rookie. You know, never anything's possible, as we've seen. But he feels like a safer bet than most to hit for a good average right out of the gate. So yeah, that's an ADP I do like a lot. With Justin Crawford of the Philadelphia Phillies and going in that, you know, back third or so of the top 300, but I feel like that's going to maybe push up to like that 200 to 225 range as we get closer to opening day. And it looks like he's going to get that spot for sure, but we'll see how the rest of spring goes and if those reports do come out.
Dude, my knee is absolutely cooked. I feel like I'm 70.
You tapping out already?
Yeah, man. My knee's telling me to retire.
Bro, you're never going to feel young again if you're still rocking those crusty knee sleeves from 2005.
What?
IncrediWear, dude. The IncrediWear knee sleeve.
What the hell is that?
This is what the pros use. Four of the last five NBA MVPs wore IncrediWear. It's not squeeze your knee until it's numb compression. It actually increases blood flow and speeds recovery. Less pain, better healing. And the best part? Wear it all day and walk like you're not 80.
Wait, so it's not just cutting off my circulation and hoping for the best?
Nope, it actually works. So you coming back in? Or are you going to sit there and feel old?
All right, let's go.
Stop letting your knees bench you. Go to freesocks.com, grab the IncrediWear knee sleeve, and get a free pair of IncrediWear socks. FreeSox.com and get a free pair of socks with your knee sleeve purchase. Get back in the game.
Kazuma Okamoto, you know, going 225-ish. You know, their ADP is fine. I mean, he's a better, you know, for everything I've seen, all the research I've done, all the discussions I've had with people that, you know, followed him and his career overseas more closely than I did, he is a better pure hitter than Murakami. Not as much power. But at the same time, like, that's not to say he's like a, you know, below average power guy or anything like that, because there's still some solid power with him. And you saw that he had a home run that was, what, 450 some odd feet the other day, you know, a handful of days ago. So he does have some good power, just not quite Murakami levels of power. But over a full year, I mean, I could see Okamoto being a 20 homer guy. I think that power's in there with a better average than Murakami gives you. But we just don't know. You know, it's always hard to, you know, kind of predict how these guys are going to translate, right? Because there's so much going on. And I think more so than a rookie or prospect, excuse me, coming up from AAA, because, you know, they have to get adjusted from the minors to the majors. That's you know, definitely an adjustment. I'm not saying it's not, because it absolutely is. But coming over from overseas, not only are you now playing in a new country, I think there's a bigger gap between, you know, the KBO or, you know, Japan than there is, you know, to the majors, and there is from the minors to the majors. And you're also just learning how to live in a new country and navigate an entirely different country on the opposite side of the world. So I think that is just a really hard transition to make. So some guys have made it seamlessly. You know, we've seen the great names, the Ichiros, the Matsuis, et cetera. There's been so many names that come over. There's also been a lot of names that have come over and struggled. So it's just really hard, you know, even though they might be a little bit older. You know, I think Okamoto's, what, like 30-ish, and Murakami has been, you know, 27 or whatever he is now. So they're not like they're a 22-year-old rookie prospect or anything like that, but they almost have to have that same adjustment period. So I don't know. It's hard to say how these guys are going to perform, you know, Okamoto, Murakami, but I feel like given where their ADPs are, I think they're both fine. It's just a matter of, you know, what type of player are you more inclined to take? Do you want the more upside guy and the more power with Murakami? You want to play a little safer and go Okamoto? I think both are fine at their respective ADPs, you know, for this season. So that's kind of talking about the top 300 guys. We got, you know, one more. I forgot to mention McGonagall. You know, he's having obviously a really good spring and coming off a really good 2025 season. I mean, it's funny, you know, him and Griffin being kind of like the, you know, one and two. Some even have McGonagall one, and that's fine, and because he is a phenomenal prospect in his own right. He just happened to be, you know, at the peak of his prospect status right at the same time as a generational talent in Connor Griffin. But there's zero doubt in my mind that Kevin McGonagall is going to be a very good hitter for a very long time. You know, I've used the acronym TANG, that orange drink, the powder came in the powder. I don't even know if it's still around. It might not be. Who knows? I haven't seen it in a long time. But, you know, it came in that little tub, the orange powder, looked like Cheeto dust, and, you know, made that orangey drink, which was super sweet. I'm probably couldn't even drink it anymore. But the acronym TANG, you know, there are no guarantees. We've seen the, you know, best can't miss prospect fall flat, but so I'm not going to say, you know, 100% guaranteed that McGonagall is going to be a stud, but, you know, he feels Like I feel a lot safer in saying that he's going to be an all-star caliber hitter than I do about most prospects that have come up over the last, you know, 5-10 years. Because the blend of contact and approach while being able to impact the ball at a high level as well is just a really rare blend of skills that you don't see at this level. You know, he has made above average, I mean, more than that, plus contact everywhere he's gone. Contact rates consistently over 80%, usually like 82 to 84%. He walks at a high clip. Last year, it was about 15% walk, 11.5% strikeout. He hit .305, .408 OBP, .583 slug. So yeah, look at that. Power as well. I've seen him hit multiple home runs. I saw him hit a home run in AA when they came here, when Erie came here to Portland, Maine. I saw him hit a home run out in the Arizona Fall League. I saw him hit an opposite field triple, showing off the wheels that he has too. So while it might not be quite as gaudy as a Connor Griffin, I mean, you're looking at a guy that could hit .300, a guy that could give you, you know, one of the better OBPs in baseball, a guy that could be a annual 20-homer guy. I don't know if he's going to be a 30-plus homer guy, but I could see consistently getting into the 20s while giving you double-digit steals as well and having one of the higher floors of any prospect I've seen in the last 5 to 10 years, as I mentioned. So I love the ADP. I think he's going to be up fairly early. He's my second-ranked rookie hitter this year, behind Weatherholt, who, again, I think is just going to be up a little bit earlier. But I think McGonagall's up pretty soon. And, hey, he might even force his way onto that opening day roster. That would not surprise me. Again, I'll put like 35-ish percent chance he's on the opening day roster. If not, should be by the end of May. You know, if they put him in AAA and he just dominates there, they bring him up, put him at short, and then move Zach McKinstry more into like a super utility role where he's really thrived over the years. So McGonagall going around, you know, 275, 300, though that's been creeping up. Probably will continue to do so. Like, you know, McGonagall a lot this year. All right, going into the 300 to 400 range of ADP. So now we're getting into, you know, the guys that are deeper league plays, the 15 team league plays. So it's like 12 team Yahoo, you know, 23 to 25 man rosters, which I think the standard probably in that range. You know, maybe you have a little bit deeper benches. Maybe it's 26, 27 players. So that puts you at like 300-ish players overall, you know, 300, 320. Some of these guys will be back-end upside flyers. Others will be more like, you know, deeper 15 league team plays or even, you know, deeper 50-round formats as well. But there's still a lot of intriguing names in this range as well. Let's start with Chase DeLauder. You know, all of you should know how high I am on DeLauder. He's a top 10 prospect talent with bottom 10 prospect durability. That's what I've said many, many times, and I can't say it any more clearly than that. I believe both those things to be very true. So just wish he could stay healthy. You know, like, that's the big thing with DeLauder. He has just never shown that he can stay healthy, and then now Walker Jenkins is almost getting into that range here. So, you know, these guys are just phenomenal talents and have shown that when they're on the field, but you know, DeLauder has played in 138 games in the minor leagues. He was drafted back in 2022. You know, so he didn't play after the draft in 2022. 2023, 57 games. 2024, 39 games. 2025, 42 games. So he hasn't even sniffed 100 games played in the season. He hasn't even cracked 60 games played in the season and hasn't cracked 50 in each of the last two seasons. But at the same time, he's a career .302. 384, 504 slash line, almost as many walks as strikeouts, 70 walks to 80 Ks. You know, he has 40 doubles, 20 home runs, 8 steals. Didn't really run much last year, only had the one steal and one attempt. But he's shown that he's an above-average speed guy, just kind of unsure as to how big a part of the game that'll be for him. Is he just like a 5-steal guy? Can he be like 12 to 15? I think that remains to be seen, but the bat has always been there. He's above average to plus contact. He's a plus approach guy. He's a plus power guy. Yeah, the durability sucks. Yeah, the swing isn't beautiful. I've already seen multiple comments. I had to put out a blanket statement like, yes, the swing is not your typical swing. It's a little unorthodox. Okay, a lot unorthodox. I'll give you that. But it works. Look at the production. Look at the metrics. It's worked. And you would think if the swing was really an issue, why wouldn't, you know, one of the better developmental organizations in baseball, Cleveland, have fixed it, have switched it? Like, they don't seem to think it's an issue. It works for him. So, you know, I'm very much a if it ain't broke, don't fix it type of guy. And that very much applies with Chase DeLauter's swing. And so at this point, you know, he's a guy that I would absolutely take an upside flyer on in the later rounds of a 12-team Yahoo League. He's a guy that I have on my home keeper league team, you know, which is kind of, you know, right around how many? Well, it's a 12-team league. We have 28 player rosters. So, yeah, it's like, you know, 336 players rostered. And I took him in the later rounds of our restocking draft. We keep 10. So, you know, he's a guy that I'm very excited for, you know, in that league, because that one, you know, kind of emphasizes our my home keeper league. That is, emphasizes or gives you kind of like a bonus of sorts, where if you're a guy that hits for a high average and also walks, so we have average and then walks. So if you do both well, it's kind of like a double positive. And that's what Chase DeLauter does. It's all comes down to the durability. Can he stay on the field? You can say that about the next guy right after him in ADP, Jordan Lawler. Can he stay healthy? I mean, I'm not as enthralled with the profile with Lawler, but I've always liked Lawler a good bit. I think there's like a 15-30 type of guy waiting to be unlocked. I have no idea what position that's going to be at this point. He's bounced around a little bit. It's not going to be shortstop because Perdomo's there. So it's going to be, you know, third base, probably at this point, you know, third base, outfield, though Arenado's there. Ketel Marte didn't get traded. I don't know. I don't know what the eligibility is going to look like a year from now with Lawler, but I still think there's a good player in there. I still think there's a fantasy-friendly profile in there, a guy that can hit for a decent average, decent OBP as well, you know, 15, 20 home runs, maybe 25 to 30 steals, if he can stay healthy and if he gets a shot. You know, he's a guy I'd rather take a shot on DeLauter for this year, because A, I like him more in general, and B, it's a much clearer path to playing time for DeLauter, who's right now, you know, as of, you know, March 5th, is penciled in to the opening day lineup for Cleveland. So I think there's a better chance of him getting 500 plate appearances this year than Lawler. So I would rather go DeLauter here, but hey, I'm not opposed to an upside play with Lawler as well. But I guess it really depends on if he looks like he's like, you know, break camp in the starting lineup. And at this point, that's kind of, that's not a long shot, but not a sure thing either. So probably won't be targeting Lawler this year, unless it looks like he's going to start, but I will be targeting DeLauter and McGonagall and Crawford. I think those are three really good upside plays in the back end of the top 300 ADP right now. You know, but going a little bit further, you know, there's four or five more guys here in the top 400. You got, you know, Dylan Beavers and Carson Benj in like that 330, 340 range. Bryce Eldridge a couple rounds later in the 370-ish range. Harry Ford's going in the back end of the top 400 as well. You know, Beavers obviously is a guy that I'm probably higher than most on. And I kind of think I've shown that in my prospect rankings, in my dynasty rankings, in my redraft rankings. But, you know, I'm now starting to question how many at-bats does he get, because that Baltimore outfield, very crowded. And they brought in Taylor Ward. And, you know, at this point, I don't know if Beavers is starting regularly, because they still got, you know, they got Colton Cowser's probably in center field. But even after him, like, they have Tyler O'Neill, they have Leody Taveras. You know, Jeremiah Jackson can play some outfield too. So it's a very crowded outfield. And just bringing in Ward, which again was a very weird move given that they already had a lot of outfielders and were looking to add pitching, so they trade away Grayson Rodriguez. Maybe they just weren't, you know, digging the physicals and all that, which definitely could be the case, but still a weird deal. But it kind of created a little bit more uncertainty here for Dylan Beavers this year. I mean, right now he's penciled in as a platoon guy with, I'm assuming this is going to be probably Tyler O'Neill, who still has plenty of power, you know, one of the strongest guys in baseball. So he's definitely going to get, you know, in there at some degree. So you got to wonder if Beavers is more like 400 plate appearances. But if he gets enough time, if he gets 500 plus plate appearances, you know, I've said it time and time again. I mean, I think he's going to be a really solid all-around player. Another guy that doesn't make nothing really stands out. He's almost like the outfield J.J. Weatherholt, but just dial it back a little bit, where he can give you above average production across the board. He's a plus runner. He is above average power guy. You know, there's a little bit of, you know, discourse out there. He hit lefties. I think that's overblown. The metrics against lefties are actually weren't that as bad as the surface line was. So I'm not really, you know, too concerned in that regard. He makes plenty of contact. He draws plenty of walks. He's a high OBP guy. Just does everything well without having any major red flags, at least in my mind. Again, I'm not as concerned about, you know, him not hitting lefties, but maybe he won't even get a chance to prove that, because, you know, if he's going to be in a platoon hitting righties and then they get Tyler O'Neill in there against lefties, that's going to probably be the spot where he gets limited. And right now, a lot of the projections have him for around 400 plate appearances, which is why his ADP has dipped a good 75 to 100 picks. He was kind of going mid-200s. Now he's going mid-300s. You know, I think he's a guy that you got to go wait it out. And if you have a later draft in March, I think you have a clearer picture of what his role is going to be. And if it says a platoon role, then he's really limited. So for him, it just really comes down to what that role is going to be. In general, I like the player a good bit. Again, really good all-around five-category upside here with Beavers. So it's got to keep an eye on how his playing time situation and how his role with Baltimore, you know, shakes out over the next couple of weeks. You know, Bryce Eldridge is a guy that probably is going to start for San Fran on opening day. You know, I guess they could send him back down to AAA, you know, but right now, he looks like he's going to be starting at DH. You know, they get Devers at first. Maybe they kind of rotate those two, give Devers some time at DH and get Eldridge in there. But this is going to be a guy that, I mean, honestly, I mean, I put a poll out. I forget which account. It might have been even from like the Rotoballer account. I honestly forget which account it was, because it was like a month or so ago. You know, who do you think was going to have a better season between Murakami and Eldridge? Because I think they could be actually pretty close, maybe a little bit lower on the average side, but plenty of power. I mean, if Eldridge gets 500 plus plate appearances, I could see him popping 25 to 30 home runs this year, just like Murakami. You know, Eldridge has shown that he's one of the best power hitters in the game today, you know, especially for prospects, and he has some of the highest power upside in general. So I could easily see him being a sizable power impact guy right off the bat, even if the average is a little bit on the lower side. But his ADP is like 150-ish picks later. So he's a guy that, you know, 12-team Yahoo League, late-round flyer, 15-teamer, you know, one of your last, you know, five guys or so, another, you know, another infielder for some depth there, probably not starting him, but a lot of upside. So he's a guy that could power his way into starting lineups for fantasy purposes. So don't love the ballpark, though. You know, that's always been a park that limits power. You know, again, what was it? Adames was the first guy to hit 30 as a Giant since Barry Bonds in 2000. What year was it? 4 or 5, something like that. So it was like 20 year, you know, 2-decade gap. But Eldridge has, as I like to call it, big boy power. So if anybody were to hit 30 again from that team, he could be a good candidate to do so. So I guess, if you're looking for some power as a late-round flyer, he is a great place to look. Harry Ford and Moises Ballesteros, both back end of the top 400 ADP. Again, you know, that's on NFBC drafts. So you're probably not looking at these guys outside of two-catcher formats. But I do like them a decent bit in that type of format. You know, given that, you know, Ford has been a guy, even though the steals went down last year, he's a guy that has always been, you know, providing some speed element. Guy that gives you good contact skills, really good, you know, approach. The on-base abilities are top-notch, and there's sneaky power there, too. There's like 15 to 18 homer pop there, too. So if he gets a chance to start over, you know, a Kiber Ruiz, and whether that be opening day or later in the season, I think he could be like a sneaky waiver wire guy at some point in the season, especially in two catcher formats for sure. I like him more than Ballesteros this year. I'll just mention in passing before we get out of here, some of these other names as we're getting, you know, well past, you know, 12 team, 15 team, you know, formats and more into like the deeper draft and hold, best buy, DC formats. But some upside guys I like that, you know, guys that to monitor because, you know, if there's an injury, bam, they could be right in there quickly. Cole Emerson with Seattle, you know, obviously, you know, guy that can hit for a high average, high OBP, you know, 20 homer type of guy, maybe double digit steals. He's almost like, you know, another comparison. He's almost kind of like McGonagall, but scaled back, you know, kind of similar. Doesn't do everything quite as well as McGonagall, but a similar type of player, just, you know, take like 85% of that or something like that. But, you know, if he's up, you know, probably be more at second base. You know, I can see him being a pretty decent asset this year. Jacob Melton, you know, he's got to watch in Tampa Bay. Aiden Miller in Philly, good power speed guy. You know, I thought maybe they were going to make a trade and maybe Alec Bohm was going to be sent out to open up a spot for Miller to slide over from short to third. But, you know, that hasn't happened yet. So he's probably waiting for an injury and he's already been dealing with an injury himself. But he's a very high upside guy that, you know, is probably going to or could spend more of the year in the majors than in AAA. So definitely a high upside guy to monitor there. Same with Ryan Waldschmidt. And there's some rumblings. He might be opening day. I don't see it, but he's also a guy that I think is up before the midway point of the season. And a guy that can be a 15 to 20 homer guy, maybe even more. Like, there's pretty sneaky good raw power there with Waldschmidt. He already had a really high EV. I think it was like 115 something this spring. So really good all-around profile, you know, speed, on-base abilities, contact skills. So he's a fun guy. And, you know, Arizona and the outfield is kind of in flux right now. So he's a guy that I absolutely could see getting plenty of time at the major league level. Two more guys, you know, actually four more guys I want to mention real quick. There's just so many good rookies this year. I mean, Joshua Baez, another name, you know, huge raw power, good athlete, a ton of steals last year, made huge, huge improvements in terms of contact and dropping the strikeout rate. So he went from me, a guy that was kind of falling off the radar, to a guy that's in top 25 prospect discussion right now. He's probably at midseason, so a guy to keep an eye on, and you kind of maybe jump the fab and get him ahead of, you know, your league mates in terms of, you know, not having to wait for fab for him or getting him and stashing him a week or two in advance, because he's going to be up at some point. I guarantee that. And there's a really fantasy-friendly profile there with Joshua Baez. I think Jet Williams is a guy that forces Milwaukee's hand early in the season. His ADP is like near 500. So, again, not a guy you're looking at in your typical, you know, 12-team, 15-team league outside of super deep formats. But I think he's going to force his way into that shortstop position. And whether that is, you know, pushing Ortiz to third and Rahifo to the bench, or pushing Ortiz to the bench, or there's an injury, I mean, I think those guys are just keeping, you know, the seats warm for Jet Williams, a guy that has really good on-base abilities, solid contact skills. He's a plus runner, and another guy that has more power than people give him credit for. Probably more of like a 12 to 15 homer guy, but definitely don't think he's like a slap hitter, single digit homer guy. I think he could be like a mid-teens homer guy over a full season. So, you know, if that's giving you, if that's what he's giving you, if he goes, it's like 10, 20 this year in 400 plate appearances, will give you a good average. I mean, that's going to be a pretty good investment right there. Our last two are outfielders, Spencer Jones, Zach Veen. Jones is a guy I'm just not targeting at all. I mean, God, I think I've talked about him 7,000 times on this podcast, so I'm not going to get into it again, but y'all know the story. It's massive raw power. The speed is there. There's been, you know, a lot of that video of him kind of changing his, you know, stance a little bit, going with the toe tap to mimic Otani. That's all great, but he's still going to make contact, and that's been a massive issue for him. We'll see. You know, the upside can rival most anybody or any prospect in the game today. But the downside is just so risky, with him that I just don't want anything to do with it, especially not this year or ever, really. Even though I still have him as a top 100 guy because of the upside, I can never figure out where I want to rank him. But this year, I mean, they brought in like five outfielders, a lot of these, you know, non-roster invitees. They're still trying to find a spot for Jason Dominguez. I just don't see him, you know, unless there's an injury or two, probably, you know, two would be needed to get him into the lineup. So I'm not really looking at Jones this year, but Zach Veen's a guy that just keep an eye on him. He's a guy that has a fantasy-friendly profile, guy that's always stolen, you know, a ton of bags, guy that has, you know, above-average raw power, course field, you know, contact skills have been fine too, you know, walks at a decent clip, you know, a lot of good there. You know, last year, you know, he had his ups and downs, but hey, he's clean. You know, bravo to you, Zach, for getting clean. Love to hear that. He's added 43 pounds, and I've seen a lot of people poo-pooing that. Oh, you know, how could you do that in one offseason? Well, it wasn't just him adding 43 pounds in bulk. It was him getting clean and getting out of some bad habits, which some of those bad habits can cause you to lose weight, you know. So I believe it. Maybe 43 is a little bit overblown, but I believe, you know, you just look at him. He looks like he's just in, you know, for lack of a better term, the best shape of his life. So I'm really excited. I'm not sure if he's up opening day, but he's a guy just given the upside, given the home ballpark, and I think a decent enough chance to play 400 plus plate appearances for Colorado this season. I think Veen's just a guy to absolutely just keep an eye on. Put him on your watch list. Write him down in your notebook if you're old school. Whatever you got to do. Just don't forget about Zach Veen and keep an eye on him, you know, the rest of this spring and, you know, early on in the season if he's back down in AAA. But so many names here. There's a lot of other names I could have gotten into. I mean, I didn't even mention Walker Jenkins, who's already hurt again. You know, Bizana could be up mid-season. Charlie Condon could be up mid-season. A lot of other names here. But I will cap it there. You know, thanks for everyone for tuning in. I'll be back with you all early next week with two episodes next week and two episodes every week leading up to opening day. And next week I will have the pitcher version of this, so keep an eye out for that. But until then, everyone take care.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.